From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is being made in Washington today, with members of the House of Representatives set to follow the Senate in approving a new economic relief package. It is largely the same kind of relief that we saw a couple of weeks ago. This bill contains $310 billion in additional money for small business loans. The money from the last bill ran out in about 2 weeks, with thousands of small businesses left out, unable to get applications through. So Congress is taking another shot. The National Federation of Independent Businesses has surveyed its members and found that nearly 30% say they couldn't get a loan last time, and they're a little nervous about what happens this time. This hour, we're opening the phones and the email to you. What kind of help do you need? Our guest is able to address the federal relief packages, who's eligible, how to apply, what you can expect. If you know anyone who missed out on the last rounds of small business loans and relief, this is the time to get answers. If you feel like the process hasn't worked for you, we can try to ascertain why. If you're wondering about what category you're in, or if you're eligible or not, or what the loan might look like, you can call the program toll-free, and we ask, do it now. 844-295-TALK. Toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI here in Rochester, 263-9994. Email the program, connections@WXXI.org. I will also ask you, if you had a good experience, if this has worked for you, if the money has arrived pretty quickly, if the application worked out just fine, you can share your thoughts as well, because we want to know how this is working. We want to know if it's working. Our guest is an attorney who's been focusing on this issue, and boy, did she do an outstanding job a couple weeks ago. We asked her to come back and help us out. Emily Cohen is an attorney with Harder Seacrest and Emory. Welcome back to the program, Emily. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so before we get right to the feedback that has already been coming in, I just want to make sure you give us some of the outlines here. I'll read a little from the New York Times, and you tell me if any of this has changed, essentially. The New York Times on the deal for aid for small business 24 hours ago. Quote, the White House and congressional Democrats have closed in on an agreement for a $450 billion economic relief package to replenish a depleted emergency fund for small businesses and to expand coronavirus testing around the country, with votes on the measure coming later in the week. The Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin described the broad outlines of the package by saying it would include $310 billion to replenish the emergency fund called the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, $50 billion for the business, the Small Business Administration's Disaster Relief Fund, $75 billion for hospitals, $25 billion for testing. And Democrats Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer said that they view this as a victory. They got the White House to go along with a lot of their requests. Is that roughly the outline of any of those numbers changed as we know it?
As of now, where we are today, no, that's right. So we've got an additional $310 billion that is slated to go into the Paycheck Protection Program, an additional $50 billion into the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, which are the loans run directly through the SBA. And then on top of that, there's an additional $10 billion that would go directly to the $10,000 emergency advances that are available through the SBA through that Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program.
What has your work been like in the last few weeks dealing with this?
It's been busy. It's been an interesting opportunity for me, for sure. Coming from kind of a traditional banking lending background, this has been an opportunity to meld that with having to stay on top of things that are coming out quickly and changing on an almost day-to-day basis. You know, we're helping clients navigate this process in real time, and we appreciate their patience as we're trying to understand it at the same time as things are being released.
Okay. And before I get to some of our calls and emails, and we expect a lot this hour, has this been an equitable process? The reason I ask is yesterday Congressman Tom Reed on this program said he wants to see this next round be less about who you know. I mean, he didn't put it that way. He said some small businesses are more sophisticated than others in terms of their connections to banks, understanding the application process, et cetera. We've got to be more equitable. Is there any reason to think this will be equitable?
I can't really speak to people's personal experiences with getting into the loan process or not. I can speak to kind of what we know from the SBA, and I can tell you that when the first $350 billion went out the door, it was in a matter of 2 weeks. And the SBA has been transparent and since releasing information about the types of businesses and the average loan size. So we know that almost 75% of the loans that went out in the first batch of $350 billion were for actually less than the $150,000 mark. And the average loan size was just over $200,000. So we are seeing a huge number of loans go out. I'm interested to hear from people today about their experiences with the program.
All right, let me get our first phone call. Owen in Brighton on the line. Go ahead, Owen.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I work with I'm employed by a small machine shop, near the airport, and we have under 50 employees. We are lucky enough to get the PPP program working, so some of us could stay employed and keep going. But from what I hear, some other shops were not fast enough to get involved, and they missed out. And a lot of my friends that work at restaurants or have their own small businesses, they totally got left out. And then I'm finding that banks themselves made $10 billion in the fees involved in the process of, I understand they wanted to make some money or get paid for their work of processing federal money for employers, but I couldn't believe that much money came out in the process for banks. And then I'm disheartened to find that companies like Ruth's Chris's or some of the bigger chain restaurants were able to apply for this money that I thought was going to go to small mom-and-pop stores that really need it the most.
Stay there for a second, Owen, and I'll let Emily respond sort of broadly there. Go ahead, Emily.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's important for folks who didn't get their applications in or didn't hear back that their application was approved before the money ran out in the first instance, those folks should certainly be working with their banks now to make sure that their application is complete and ready to go as soon as the money hits. You know, Evan, as you mentioned, we're looking at this bill being passed hopefully by the House here before the end of the week and signed into law. And banks could be up and running again here with being able to submit the applications to the SBA by the end of the week. So if you're in one of those situations where you don't yet have, you weren't able to get your money in the first best bucket of loans, you know, make sure you're trying to put yourself in the best position possible, which is to make sure that your application is with your bank. Everything is kind of all you're crossing your T's and dotting your I's and otherwise ready to go. The SBA has done, I think, a nice job of putting out some additional guidance that is helping those of us that are trying to help people navigate this process understand who's eligible and who's not. And we're just trying to kind of digest that at the same time as everyone else here.
And Owen is also bringing up, I think it was Shake Shack who kind of pledged back what they were going to get after there was some public outcry. But can you help us understand, Emily, what constitutes a small business? I mean, we heard a company, the U.S. ambassador to Belgium, his family owns a company in the Midwest that did more than $100 million in sales last year, and they got a small business loan for $5 million on this. So what's a small business?
Sure. So I can't speak to the specific one-offs because without looking at those businesses, their financials, and the kind of number of employees they have, I'm not able to provide kind of a specifics on those. But I can tell you from the way the law is written, if you're a business or a non-501c3 not-for-profit and you have less than 500 employees, you could be considered small under the SBA's PPP program. There's also some other kind of tests that the SBA has put out there, things that are based on, for example, your tangible net worth of your company and your net income over the last 2 years. If you come below a $15 million threshold and a $5 million threshold of your net income over the last 2 years, irregardless of your employee size, according to the SBA and the Treasury, you could also be considered a small business. And now there's some more complicated nuances to the law that when you're looking at a business, you can't just look at one entity in its individual capacity. You have to look at that entity as considered among all of its affiliates. So that means under the SBA's law, under the SBA's rules, that if entity A, company B, or company A, excuse me, is 100% owned by company B, in order to do the employee count, you have to aggregate it among the two entities because they would be considered affiliates. So it gets kind of confusing when you get into the granularities of the specifics of the businesses. But generally speaking, if you're a business that doesn't have to worry about affiliation rules, if you're not 100% owned by or more than 50% owned by a company or share management or share board of directors with another entity, if you have less than 500 employees within your entity, you could be considered small and eligible for the PPP loan.
Okay. Owen, does that answer some of what your concerns are? We lost you.
Some of those.
Go ahead, Owen.
It sounds like the second round of help here being proposed is addressing some of those problems. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
Thanks, Owen. Go ahead, Emily. Yeah.
I was just going to say, and I think one thing that Congress is trying to do in the second loan, in the second process, in the second bit of money that's coming out here, is setting aside some of the funds for small lenders and credit unions. You know, those types of lenders that maybe small, very small businesses would be utilizing on a regular basis. We heard a lot that a lot of people saying that they weren't able to connect with a bank because banks were looking mostly for their existing clients. And so what Congress is trying to do with the second bit of money is they've set aside $60 billion of new funds. And that $60 billion is only to be utilized for small lenders and credit unions. And I'm hopeful, and I know others are hopeful, that that money will be utilized by those, you know, kind of smallest businesses that felt like they were locked out in the first instance.
I have a big pile of email that I'm going to start reading, but we've got some phone lines open as we talk to Emily Cohen from Harder Sea Crest and Emory about the latest federal relief package, which, as Emily said, you could see that this money for small business loans on offer within just a few days. Is that right, Emily?
Yeah, absolutely. The first bit of money was gone within 2 weeks, and so I think this is also going to move quickly.
Okay, so listeners, you got questions about eligibility? Who, you know, if you feel like, you know, it didn't work out for you last time, you missed out, how to apply, how to make sure an application goes through. It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email us, connections@WXXI.org. Let me start moving through your email. Sarah says, I wanted to share what's happened to me as a sole proprietor through the EIDL loan. I applied over 2 weeks ago with no email or acknowledgement of that application. I received an email last week saying businesses would get $1,000 per employee as the advance, not the aforementioned $10,000. When I called, they said this policy did indeed change after the application process had started. There is no way to check on the status of your individual application. You will just get an email from a different organization with your status. She says it's lendio.com. Please share your listeners with this website with your listeners if possible, since apparently many decisions have already been sent but have been ending up in spam folders. That's from Sarah. Emily, does that experience ring true to you?
Yeah, absolutely. We've heard this across the board that on the EIDL, so I just want to make clear for everyone that's listening the main difference between the two programs, right? On the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program, that's being run through private banks and lenders. The EIDL, the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program, that's being run directly through the SBA. You apply directly through the SBA website, and it seems like the SBA has used this Lendio partner in order to get some of the money out to the two folks. And we heard through most of last week and a little bit the week before that things were starting to shift on the EIDL side. Exactly like Sarah mentioned, the SBA put into place a informal policy, and I say informal because it was never really codified on the SBA website or anywhere that we could kind of look to see what it says, but an informal policy that if you were applying for a $10,000 advance, your advance was going to be based on the number of employees you had, and it's $1,000 per employee with a maximum of $10,000. Now, I don't know whether or not that will stay in place after the new money flows into the EIDL program, but we would encourage that based on the way that that's been done in the past, you should expect that if it's not that exact policy, there may be a similar policy that decreases the amount of money you could get under the EIDL. Hmm. For folks that are kind of stuck in the EIDL bucket, they haven't heard anything yet. 100% what Sarah said is true. Check your spam folder, look for something from Lendio.com, see if you've gotten something from them, because that we're hearing that emails are coming from Lendio. But similar to what you were saying on your last hour, Evan, make sure that you're being cognizant of, you know, not having it be a scam. You know,
sure.
We know that people are also kind of scamming around that too. So Lendio is somewhere we know things are coming from. If you see that email, you shouldn't assume it's automatically a scam. But the EIDL loans, I think once they have the additional $50 billion in there, we should see more money going out the door on those pretty quickly.
All right. Let's keep working through your phone calls and emails as we try to understand help coming from the federal side. Victor in Rochester next. Go ahead, Victor.
Hi. I have a question regarding employees. I'm a 15-person employee in Rochester and recently was fortunate enough to get the PPP money. My question is this. We are a shelter in place as a result of the executive orders by Governor Cuomo. Am I able to call my employees back to work, not to work? Because
yeah,
we're not.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very typical question. We're getting asked that a lot right now because, of course, you know, we're under the pause here in New York until May 15th. So a lot of companies, even if they could pay people, they're going to be paying people to stay at home. And so the way the CARES Act is drafted, it doesn't contemplate that an employee has to actually be in the office or in the workplace doing the work. The idea of the PPP is to take people off unemployment and put them back onto payroll. And so you would be paying the employees, your 15 employees, to do what work they can do from home. You know, get creative and thinking of things that professional development or other kind of on-call jobs that folks could do at home. And we recognize for some companies that's just not doable. There just aren't tasks that folks can do at home. But if you're putting them back on your payroll, that satisfies what you need to do in order to be eligible for the forgiveness under the PPP.
So if I understand you correctly, then we're manufacturing, so there's really nothing these employees can do from home, or at least a majority of them. So if I am asking them to come back, are they entitled to accept the offer to come back? Because that's not something many of them would want to do under the
current that's another. Yeah, that's another problem that's coming up is if you go to an employee and you say, you know, we got the loan, we need you to come back because we'll get the forgiveness. Here's your job back, but we're going to pay you and you're going to stay at home. Some folks may say no or not want to come back. What do you do then? And as drafted, the law doesn't really contemplate how you should handle that. You know, we recommend documenting everything, putting it in a letter, putting it in an email to your employees, making sure you have clean documentation of everything. And we hope that by the end of this week or beginning of next week, we'll have some additional guidance that says, what do you do in those instances? But the first step would be, yes, reaching out to your employees and urging them to come back or telling them they have to come back.
I understand, but can they refuse to come back to work? Because under normal circumstances, if they're offered their job back, if they were laid off for a slowdown or whatever reason, they have to come back to work.
Yeah, absolutely. They can't just say unilaterally, I don't want to come back. No, you would tell them they have to come back. Their job is there. And that's why we're saying documented in case, for whatever reason, they end up not coming back.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, thank you for your help.
Victor, thank you. Good luck to you. Next up, Randy in Shalott. Go ahead, Randy.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First-time caller, big-time listener.
Oh, thanks.
I am a self-employed hairstylist. I rent a chair. And I'm wondering if there's anything other than unemployment that I would be able to qualify for.
Emily.
Yes. Thanks, Evan. So, Randy, do you? They did come out with some guidance last week as it relates to self-employed individuals, and it's going to come down to how kind of you file your taxes for that for the prior year about how you would go ahead and submit your application. So the guidance that we got is that self-employed folks are able to apply for the PPP loan program, and they're going to base it off of what was filed and what was documented as your income on your 1040 Schedule C, which would have been filed with your income taxes for the prior year. So if you have kind of that basis of information to provide to your bank, what you should do is go to your whoever you have a lending or banking relationship with, tell them that you want to file a PPP loan application as a self-employed individual, and then you should be able to fill out the application based on your what you recorded as income from the prior year on your 1040.
Okay, there was 1040 Schedule C or D, did you say?
Schedule C as in cat.
As in cat, okay. And then I can do that through my bank. Well, that's great. I finally got somebody who knows what they're what they're talking about. Okay, thank you so much. Down at the beach,
absolutely,
enjoying the view, even though I'm in the car.
Randy, thank you very much. Good luck to you. From a fellow Shalottian. So good luck to you. Thank you. And you know what? Randy's question allows me to do two things. Frees up another phone line, and I'll remind our listeners, if you want to call the program, it's toll-free as we're talking about help for small businesses, available loans, how to apply, who's eligible, and what to do to make sure that you're moving your application as efficiently as you can. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Email the program connections at WXXI.org. Kyle emails to say, self-employed people are the ones who have been forgotten the most. We are apparently in some strange category that the government doesn't really count as small business worthy of the same level of assistance in a crisis. Can someone tell me how to get the government to take self-employment seriously? That's from Kyle. You know, that's not a specific question, Emily, but I think there's a lot of people who are in Randy's category or Kyle the emailer concerned about being self-employed and what that means for eligibility. What would you say to that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what a lot of the self-employed individuals and independent contractors are feeling is like they missed kind of the opportunity to even apply because a lot of banks were not, and to no fault of the banks, the SBA came out and said and the Treasury said that self-employed individuals and independent contractors were not able to apply until a week after the applications had even opened in the first instance. And so we got some actually helpful guidance from the Treasury as it related to the self-employed application, I think on the morning that the applications were starting to be available. And it's because when you're thinking about the process of the loan and how the loan is set up, it's based, your loan amount is based on your payroll costs. And so it needed to be shifted into how you were going to capture those payroll costs for self-employed folks. But what we know now, and what if you're an independent contractor or a self-employed individual and you weren't able to get your application in yet, you should be contacting your lender and asking for a copy of the application because you are now eligible. If you had income from self-employment and you filed a Form 1040 Schedule C with your taxes, you may be eligible for a loan. And that loan is going to be based off of your net profit amount that you identified on your 1040 from the prior year.
Is that the category that had the most trouble in the first round from your experience? I know it doesn't, you know, your experience is limited to what you've had to work with, but was self-employment a category of people who were struggling with what to do in the last couple of weeks?
I think self-employed applicants were struggling with the fact that they had to wait almost, in some instances, a week to 10 days before they were even able to apply. Because we didn't have the guidance on how they could apply, and banks weren't allowed to accept applications in some instances because we just didn't know how those applications were going to look. But they had a much smaller window to get their applications in before the money ran out. And so, yeah, I think the next bucket will include a lot more of those applicants.
Not to get wonky, but I'm going to read Ashley's question, which I think you've just answered, but I'm going to be specific about one point here. She wrote, are there special considerations for self-employed or independent contractors? I'm a travel agent. I've lost over half my annual income, but haven't been able to apply because my bank wasn't accepting applications from independent contractors, and then the money ran out. So self-employed and independent contractors, same or different in terms of legal consideration?
Same bucket of folks. If you make any income from self-employment, whether you characterize yourself as a independent contractor, sole proprietor, just self-employed, and if you file that form, the Form 1040 Schedule C, then you may be eligible to get money under this program.
All right. I hope that helps. And Ashley, if it doesn't, you can follow up 844-295-TALK. If you own a small business, if you know someone who does, if you're concerned about availability, or frankly, if the process has worked for you, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free because we would like to know that it's working. 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Let's do this. I've got a couple of emails I'm going to get to right after the break. Jim, Patrick, if you've emailed, we'll get those points in right after the break. And we'll continue with our guest, Emily Cohen, who is an attorney with Harder, Seacrest, and Emery. She has been working pretty exclusively in the last few weeks, especially on helping small businesses understand what the application process looks like and how to make sure you're in position to get the money before it's gone. It took only 2 weeks for the last $350 billion to run out. There's another $310 billion coming, and it might be available starting in the next few days. So how do you make sure you are in line for that? 844-295-TALK, toll free. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We'll get right back to your calls and emails after the other side of this break. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections. I know you've seen the protest videos, but it turns out research shows that Americans are pretty united when it comes to civil liberties and COVID-19. Across political party, across age ranges, Americans are willing to let the government go pretty far in order to keep public health first. Then in our second hour, a conversation about mental health and telehealth. Talk with you Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Hang in there if you're on the phone because we've just blown up here. Let me get a quick email and then we'll kind of sort out the phone calls. Jim emails to say, if I applied, didn't get through last time, do I have to do this again? Do I have to reapply? Emily.
You shouldn't have to reapply in its entirety, but I would recommend that you reach out to whoever you applied with to make sure that they are still processing your application. From what I understand from several banks is even if you didn't get your application in the first time, they are still processing applications on the bank side to get ready as soon as the SBA opens the portal where they can submit the information. So you should certainly be making sure that your bank has all of your information lined up and ready to go once that happens.
Good luck to you, Jim. All right, Alice in Rochester next. Go ahead, Alice.
Hi. One thing I'm wondering if independent contractors who, for instance, get 1099s and fill out a Schedule C, if the small business loan really is not going to work for them, could also apply under the expanded unemployment guidelines for unemployment as a gig worker.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Emily. Yep.
No, sorry, Evan. I was going to say I'm not entirely sure, and I don't know as it relates specifically to what might be available under the unemployment piece. If you are unsuccessful in applying for a PPP loan as an independent contractor, I would, and you want to look into unemployment, I would certainly urge you to reach out and speak to someone kind of more in detail about that. My expertise is really more geared just towards the PPP section.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Alice. Good luck to you. 844-295-TALK if you've got questions on what to do here. Phil in Fairport is next. Go ahead, Phil.
Oh, hi, and thank you very much for doing this.
Sure.
Kind of a quirky specific. I bought a small business about 3 years ago, took out a loan to buy the business. I'm still paying off that loan, so I've actually never collected a salary these past years. I do have myself on the books through paychecks at, minimum wage, 40 hours a week, but I've never cashed a paycheck. It just rolls back in for paying off that loan for buying the business. So I don't know if I can collect much of anything.
Okay. So hang there, Phil, and let's walk through this with Emily Cohen. Go ahead, Emily.
Absolutely. So, Phil, is it when you're looking at your business that you bought, do you have other employees that are also part of the business, or is it just you?
My partner, my wife, who's a partner in the business, and she's on the books for 4 hours a week just to keep it above board.
Okay.
But neither of us are actually cashing paychecks. We're just letting that fall back into paying off the loan we took out to buy the business.
Okay. And do you file, would you file your business? You wouldn't consider yourself would you consider yourself a self-employed? Do you file a 1040 with your taxes?
Yes.
Okay, so then, yes, what you should do is you would be kind of in this bucket of self-employed applicants, and you would be eligible based on the net income at the end of the year of your business. And so you wouldn't necessarily have to document your payroll costs. Instead, you would look at the net profit line in your Schedule 1040, and then they would find a monthly average based on that, and you would get approximately 8 weeks' worth of that monthly average.
And if the I'm actually not showing much of any net profit because it's all going back into it. That was
yeah, and that's unfortunately kind of where you might run into trouble is if you're putting it back into the business. You won't necessarily have the profit to show. But you will be eligible for kind of whatever is there, as well as if you're paying your wife as a salaried employee, you may be able to qualify for that bit as well. I think yours is kind of an interesting situation and one that may require kind of a finer look. So I would circle up with whoever you're thinking about going with and saying, here, this is what I have. Tell me how I can try to kind of maximize my loan amount.
Okay. And this is just straight through my bank?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so very much for your help.
Yeah, Phil, thank you, and good luck to you. Dan in Irondequoit. Next, go ahead, Dan.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've listened to you a million times. You're great, and this is the first time I ever called in.
Well, I'm glad we can help.
I have a business that's 88 years old. I've been in it for 58 myself, and I had to lay everybody off when we were forced to close. And so now all these people, and I've applied for the PPP loan, and I am drawing unemployment as well as all my staff is doing that. My fear is that I'll As soon as I get that PPP loan, I have to start dishing it out as far as the payroll goes, right? Or can you hold off on starting the starting date of that?
Okay. Stay right there, Dan.
And I got a further Emily question to follow up on that.
Yeah, so. So stay right there, and Emily will help you. Go ahead, Emily.
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, if you're thinking about how the money works, so you apply for a loan, you get your loan, you get the money into your bank account. For the sake of simplicity, let's use today as an example.
Okay.
If you get your money on today, April 23rd, your 8-week calendar for loan forgiveness starts the day the money hits your account. So it would start April 23rd.
Okay.
On that day, you have 8 weeks to spend the proceeds of your loan and be eligible for forgiveness based on what you spend.
Okay.
So you could presumably accept your money, hold either all or a portion of it, but you would not be eligible for forgiveness beyond that 8-week period. So if you don't spend the money in the 8 weeks, you kind of lose the ability to get the forgiveness on it. At the end of the 8 weeks, whatever is not forgiven, because in some instances, people either are just going to have more loan amount than they will be able to have spent over the 8-week period on payroll costs and kind of other permitted uses, or they just choose to, for whatever reason, not spend it for the forgivable amount. At the end of the 8 weeks, your loan would convert into a 1% interest loan that would have to be paid back over 2 years.
Could you use whatever is left in there and just pay it back?
Yes. Yep. You could certainly, if at the end of the 8 weeks you have money left, each of these loans are set up with something called no prepayment penalties.
Okay.
And so you could just give it back to the bank. You would have accrued 8 weeks worth of 1% interest on that, because the interest does start accruing the minute the money hits your bank, your account, excuse me, but you could turn around and give it back to your bank.
My biggest fear is that in 8 weeks from now, we are, even if things start to open up again, it's going to take a long time before we get up to a snuff where we'll be operating at a loss, and I'll probably have to start laying people off again. So it just is, the whole thing is crazy. So I'm wondering whether I should take it at all, because right now they're getting their unemployment, plus they're getting an extra $600 a week. They're not going to want to come back.
Yeah,
so
and this kind of goes back to what we had.
In a very pickle solution. I'm torn about it.
Yeah, absolutely. This was kind of what the caller before was saying, is what if you go to an employee and they don't come back? You know, you have to make those hard decisions as a business owner and kind of decide about whether or not you keep it. If you take the money and you decide not to use it during the 8 weeks and you don't want the forgiveness bit, but you just want the loan, you have to be very cautious too about your uses of the loan beyond the 8 weeks. The loan is really meant to be used for payroll costs. So you can't take a loan, keep it, and use it for anything outside the scope of payroll costs, which must make up 75% of your use.
Right.
And then the other 25% can be, you know, rent, utilities, mortgage interest, and debt on existing, or interest payments on existing debt.
Right, which there's hardly anything left for that anyhow. So when you take 75%, does that include the other our half of the Social Security taxes as well?
The 75% will make up the larger bucket of payroll costs. So that's not just wages and salaries or commissions. It could also be health insurance premiums and other payments that are made on by the employer to the employee.
Right. So anything that I pay, like where I'm responsible for collecting, we use paychecks, and they make all deductions, and the people get their net pay out of that, but I still have to pay the other half of their Social Security taxes as a business owner. Is that part of that come out? Does that part come out of the 75% as well?
The payments that you're making for federal income tax and federal Medicaid payments are excluded from payroll costs. Those would not be part of that 75%, but kind of other state taxes would be included, state and local taxes, as well as like retirement benefits or health insurance premiums.
Right, but so it's really more than 75%, because you have to pay the other half of the Medicare and the Social Security then too, as an employer.
Yeah, you would pay those. They just wouldn't be able to be qualified for, those amounts would not be qualified for forgiveness.
So it's really not, 75% is not an accurate number then. It's 75% plus the Social Security and the Medicaid tax.
Yeah, I want to take a step back. So the 75%, when you're thinking about what that threshold means.
Right.
If you get a loan for $100,000, just to throw a even number out there, $100,000, you have to use 75% of that $100,000 for payroll costs.
Okay.
And that payroll cost could be encompassed of wages, salaries, commissions, as well as retirement benefits that you pay to your employees, health insurance benefits that you pay to your employees, all the employer side of payments. It does not include those federal taxes. They've taken that out as being part of the payroll cost. So those amounts are kind of separate from your 75% because they just have to be paid by the employer directly. They can't be, they're not part of the forgiveness piece.
That's really confusing. So,
yes.
Well, it doesn't seem, they're saying it covers the payroll cost, but my payroll cost is the other, 6% of Social Security tax, something like that, and Medicaid, it's somewhere in that neighborhood. So then on top of the 75% forgiveness, then I have to pay the other 6% of their salaries as well.
Yes, you would
so
have
that
to.
That
would
come out of the other 25%.
No, that would. I mean, that would actually have to just be a separate payment that you're making, separate from the loan proceeds. That wouldn't be part of the permissible uses under the loan proceeds.
Okay, that doesn't seem right at all either. So I think I'm better off not just forgetting the loan altogether and just staying on unemployment insurance. Because at least when I bring people back, I'll be safer to do it. So,
Dan, but before you go, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Because one of the things that we want to do with this program is be a voice and a platform for people who are out of work or small businesses who have these kinds of questions. And we want to make sure that your voice gets to the policymakers. And
you know, I appreciate that.
So if you were designing the policy to actually directly help small business owners and American workers, it sounds to me like it wouldn't look like the program that Emily has to kind of deal with. What would it look like? What's the direct way to help that is not happening?
Well, I think it would be best to leave everybody on unemployment insurance until we can at least are able to open them back up again. And then maybe we could start bringing people back to work and at least have a little time to try and get up to speed again. Because the day we open up our doors, there's not necessarily going to be 100 people banging down the doors to come in. It's going to take quite a while for that to build up. It might take a year for that to back up. And then last year with our business, we actually had a little bit of a loss. And so we started out really strong in the beginning of this year, and then all of a sudden this happened. And so I'm just taking money that I've put away over the years, so we are pretty well financed to be able to do it. But it's all money that I've earned, and instead of taking it out of the business, like the gentleman before, I put it in there. But I don't have debt, but I have savings and a lifetime of earnings that I've kept in the business. And if I start depleting that, it's going to put us out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a scary thing about it. So if these rules are the way they are, there's just not. You're better off letting them collect that. And plus, they get the extra $600, which they aren't going to get if they come back, and I put them back on the payroll again.
So, a lot of complication, unfortunately.
Well, it is. It's keeping me up at night. That's for sure.
I'm sorry to hear it, Dan. Good luck to you. Hope we've helped here. And
okay.
Yeah.
Well, your answer. But there's nobody who really can give you the answers to these questions. I've talked to the bank. I've talked to. Nobody's really coming forth with the answers, and it's really, really complicated. And I think it's not the fault of the bank because there's so many things coming at us fast and furious that nobody really knows the answers to anything, and they really can't answer the questions.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases. So good luck to you. Thanks for making time for the program, Dan. And again, I do hope it helps, though I know you've got some tough decisions to make. Let's keep working through questions from listeners with Emily Cohen, who is our guest, an attorney with Harder, Seacrest, and Emory. And let me get Michael in Webster is next. Go ahead, Michael.
Oh, yes. Hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I had a question on the two programs. I'm self-employed with no employees. Would I be better off going for the PPP or the EIDL?
Without knowing kind of too much about your business, I don't know that I can tell you which is better or worse. I can tell you some kind of distinctions between the two, and there's also nothing prohibiting you from applying for both, which is something that a lot of people are, I think, are also doing because they really are meant for different purposes. The PPP loan has the forgiveness piece. The EIDL loan does not have that piece to it. So if you apply and get money under the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP, you are able to at least apply and try, hopefully get a portion, if not all, of your loan forgiven after the 8 weeks. On the EIDL side, there is not the forgiveness piece, but there is kind of a wider swath of things that could be used for. You're not, similar to what we were just talking about with Dan, you're not as stuck with having to use it for payroll costs, or that 75% threshold. You can use it for more kind of working capital needs. So I think I would recommend, if you are thinking about applying for both, or thinking about applying for one or the other, perhaps instead thinking about applying for both and seeing if you could, kind of chart that territory and see if you need the money for both loans, that may be the way to go. As well, under the EIDL, there's the $10,000 advance that when you apply, you check a box in your application saying you'd like the $10,000 advance. And that amount of money is actually it's non-refundable. It would be rolled into your forgiveness under your PPP as your money. You wouldn't have to pay back the SBA for that money.
So just that $10,000, if I went with the EIDL, that would turn into a loan after a while. I mean, that's not forgivable, you said.
Yes, the EIDL is just a loan. It's up to $2 million. It's amortized over a longer period of time, so you have up to, I think, 30 years to pay it back. But it's just a loan. It's a 3.75% interest rate loan for businesses.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you. I'll look into it. Thanks.
All right, Michael, good luck to you. Thank you very much. Let's get Jim and Henrietta next. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, hi. I've got a kind of a unique situation, and I could use some advice. It's actually for my son-in-law. We moved here from California. I needed to place my wife in a skilled nursing facility, and my daughter and her husband decided to move here at the same time, which for them was about November. He is has his own business. He's a photographer. He does not have employees. He had I'll call it a thriving business on the West Coast. And his plan was to, transfer that business here and build up that business here. Now, because of the COVID situation, he has not had the opportunity to, generate that business. So he moved here, left his business behind in Southern California, Northern California, has not been able to generate income here because of the situation. So I'm speaking on his behalf, but he's trying to figure out how he could go about applying for a small business loan. He has no income. He doesn't have income he could show in New York State. He has no employees. So just looking for some guidance that I might be able to pass on to him.
Absolutely, Jim. So so the way the self, well, I just want to take first the EIDL loan. If your son-in-law is looking for money that would be just a traditional loan, there's no kind of income requirement that he'd have to show basic, past income from the prior year in the EIDL realm. He could apply for an EIDL loan through the SBA website. They may ask him for tax returns and that type of information. But if he moved here, there's no requirement that it be money that was accumulated in New York State per se. He could explain the situation. He was working in California, moved to New York and November and was unable to kind of establish a base of income on the new where he was now since his move, and he may still be eligible for the $10,000 advance as well as a loan under the EIDL.
Uh-huh.
On the PPP side, the way they're looking at a loan amount for self-employed individuals is based on your 2019 tax return, your Schedule 1040, your 1040 Schedule C from 2019. So if he has earned money through the business in 2019, regardless of whether it was in California or New York, he may be eligible for that. Now, his loan amount may be lower than prior years because, unfortunately, with the move, he had a lower likely kind of income from 2019 because he has been kind of stuck in trying this transition phase. But but he still may be eligible for some funds based on that. So he should proceed and apply if he's interested, or at least speak with his banker about applying, because he will be eligible presumably for any of the income that he would have reported in his 2019 tax returns.
Right. So if I'm hearing, just one last question, it sounds like he may be eligible for either EIDL or PPP or possibly both.
Yes. Yep. You can apply for both loans. If you are applying for both loans, there's some things to just to keep in mind. You can't use your EIDL loan for payroll costs because they will ask that you roll that into your PPP loan. But if he is interested in an EIDL loan for kind of more general working capital reasons, he could apply through the SBA website for that program. And then he could also and should also speak with a lender about applying for the PPP loan.
Okay. I think initially during the last round, I know he had a concern because he went into the banks and they just were not familiar enough with the process. But I'm going to guess now that the banks are probably better up to speed and it might be a smoother process.
Yes, I think that's right. I think the banks were, they just didn't have the guidance for the self-employed individuals. We didn't know. The Treasury hadn't told us until really the day they were supposed to start accepting applications. So I think now they're catching up on those applications and getting that sorted out.
Great. Okay. How do we go about applying for the PPP? I know this is a very basic question, but
absolutely. You would go to, if he has a bank or a lending relationship in existence already, he has a bank account for the business somewhere, he should go there first because they are more familiar with the business he has. Again, it doesn't necessarily have to be a bank in New York. It could be a bank that he used or has used in California. And he could start the conversation there, tell them he's interested in applying for the PPP and ask for a copy of their application. A lot of the banks have moved it directly online. They have online portals. So he would submit the application online and he should be prepared with his Schedule C of his 1040, because that's really where they're going to want to see for the self-employed individual. That information is going to back up his loan amount.
Okay, but he does need to have a business account or a business relationship with that bank in order to do that.
No, it's not a prerequisite for all banks. You don't have to have an existing relationship with a bank. It's just making the process faster because banks are required to do something called KYC, Know Your Customer, before they're able to lend money to folks. You have to have completed that. And in order to open an account, you would have already done that. So it can make the process more streamlined.
All right, let me just jump in and Jim, thank you and good luck. Hope that helps. I want to just rip through as many more emails as we can in the next few minutes. So real quick here. Teresa says, Emily said self-employed individuals who filed 1040 Schedule C last year may be eligible for an SBA loan. Is this 2019 or would 2018 filings count if 2019 hasn't been filed yet?
It's your 2019, but you don't necessarily have to have filed. It will be, you filed or will file.
Okay. Patrick says, I've been fortunate enough to stay quite busy during this time because most of my clients are well established. Should I apply for a small business loan anyway? Am I missing out on anything? What are the conditions of the loan typically in this scenario?
Yeah, this is a hot topic right now because people want to know what the certifications borrowers need to make as it relates to your need for the money. And we got some guidance from the SBA this morning as it relates to this. The SBA told us that borrowers have to make, we knew that the certification is current economic uncertainty makes the loan request necessary to support the ongoing operations of the applicant. And they told us a little bit about what they mean by that, and that it's that borrowers have to make that certification in good faith. You have to take into account your current business activity as well as your ability to access other sources of liquidity to support your operations. So you have to be able to make a good faith certification that the pandemic, COVID-19, makes the loan necessary to support your ongoing operations. I think it's a tricky place, and we would recommend you speak with a lawyer and accountant if you're in that situation before you apply for the loan.
Sarah says, just looking at the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Emergency Advance, their website, you cannot apply right now according to the website. Is this the case where right now the SBA, the PPP, and the EIDL are not quite available until Congress passes this? Is that right, Emily?
That's exactly right. Yep. The money is still waiting to be appropriated. Once it is, we imagine they'll open their website back up.
Okay. Same kind of thing with applying through banks. I've got so many emails. Mike says, my bank won't take my application until the new money is there.
Yeah, we've heard that from some banks because they're not able to do anything with it. So I would just make sure your application is ready. Stay on top of it as soon as the money comes out. stay on whatever your news source is and try to keep in touch with your bank to let them know you have an application. You're going to be submitting it as soon as their application portal is back open.
And Eric says, good news. While listening to the show, I decided to check my business bank account, and to my great shock, the EIDL funds were just deposited today. The only complaint would be the lack of communication and the fact that it was much slower than planned. But hey, it's an emergency, and some things won't be pretty just as long as they happen. That's from Eric. Final thoughts from you, Emily?
That is great news. You know, I think one thing that I keep trying to keep in perspective is the SBA has processed more loans in the past, you know, 2 weeks or 3 weeks than they have in the past 10 years. So they're, you know, moving as quickly as they can and trying to process these. So I'm glad to hear that money is starting to flow.
Emily, great service. I can't thank you enough. I know it's been a busy hour and it's been a busy several weeks, and it's going to get even busier for you at Harder, Seacrest, and Emory. Thank you for the service you provide for our listeners in doing this.
Thank you, Evan. Thank you for having me, and good luck, everyone. I hope the money continues to flow.
You got it. Emily Cohen, an attorney with Harder, Seacrest, and Emory. Hey, listeners, tonight, 8 p.m., WXXI-TV, I will be hosting a forum. We're going to bring in researchers from the University of Rochester Medical Center and Rochester Regional Health, and we're talking fighting COVID-19, vaccines, antivirals, and the path forward tonight. 8 p.m. live, AM 1370 WXXI-TV, and streaming on our various platforms. Megan Mack, Rob Braden, Evan Dawson, thank you, and we'll talk to you tonight or tomorrow.